Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 2. What if you were an alcoholic at age 9?
I'm the youngest of four children. My mother started having kids at age 15. My mother, she woke up one morning and the fridge was empty and went to turn the lights on and the electricity was off and a 3-day eviction notice on the door, and she was pregnant with me. My father called my mom and say, hey, you know, something went down and so on. And she was, you know, she was obedient to him, probably out of fear, I'm sure. And that afternoon, two plainclothes detectives show up at the door. She invites them in. They put down about 12 mugshots on the coffee table and said, would you mind pointing out your husband? And she points out his picture. And they said, would you mind pointing out your brother-in-law, Bobby? My father's brother. And without hesitancy, she pointed out his picture as well. And they said, well, that is amazing to us. And she said, what's that? And they said, well, the woman that they kidnapped, brutally raped, sodomized, forced perversion on, and attempted to murder last night, dumped her body off out on Matherfield Road and left her for dead, pointed their pictures out just as fast as you did. You either let us know where he is, or your kids are going into foster care and you're going to prison. My father had a real strange sense of humor. He used to like to do things like put liquid acid in the mashed potatoes so he could watch his family frying on LSD at dinner time. They didn't have reality television shows back then, so he got to have that, you know, front seat in his own home. My father's family is the type that if you snitch, it means you get killed. And amongst just being a rapist, he was known to take people's lives as well. And when he told her that and she snitched on him, she knew that he was going to try and kill her. So he had a foster brother because he was brought up in foster care, and she went to him and said, look, Russell's going to try and kill me. Because in the 70s, this is 1970, they didn't have the strict laws that they do now for that kind of behavior, and so he got out on bail. And so she gets with this man and says, you know, I need help. I got to get out of town. And so he left his pregnant wife, took my mom and the kids and went to the house to pick up her belongings, and my father was sitting on the porch with a sawed-off shotgun sitting in his lap. So they left everything behind, went up to Spokane, Washington, and I was born later on, October 4th, 1970, in Spokane. Yeah, my mother at the time when I was born, I believe, was 22. My mother and my father were drug abusers and alcoholics, and my father was a criminal person. He spent a lot of time in Folsom Prison. He ran with the mafia inside of the prison. One of my uncles was a prostitute, and the other two were heroin dealers. My father was one of them. My father bunked somebody in prison, meaning he sold them either crap stuff or ripped them off or whatever. And there was a man named Brownie who was supposed to be my father's good friend and took him aside and gave him a full load, a hot shot is what they call it, and laced it with battery acid. And so he was murdered. 6 years later, my Uncle Bobby was doing the same thing by association. He tried to break past the mafia, and they killed him too, same way. And on April 2nd of 1976, I got a call from my aunt on that date in Sacramento, downtown on 10th and C, is where they found my father's body in a public restroom with a hypodermic needle in his arm. And he was 27 years old. I was 5. My father's foster brother later became my stepdad. The type of house we grew up in, you know, I come home, I'm 5 years old, and my mother would be having sex with some young guy on the couch, and I didn't know what to make of that at 5 years old. I was exposed to shit that most adults aren't supposed to see, let alone 5-year-old children. And I'd go up the stairs. We were very poor, and laying in the middle of the floor would be my stepfather in a blackout drunk, laying in a pool of his own vomit with his dentures in the middle of it. We did not have normal conversations in our house. We had to grow up very, very fast. And drinking at that time was, it was encouraged. It was salt and pepper on our table. So at 5 years old, I was drinking bourbon. I was drinking beer, getting up into the cabinet, drinking my stepdad's cough syrup with codeine in it. And I realized something then where when I drank, I became more entertaining to my parents. And the more entertaining I became, the more attention I got. And the more attention I got, the more I drank. And it was just this repetitive cycle. I was 5. I hadn't even started kindergarten yet. My mother ran off with the mailman, Bob the mailman, you know. And she was very promiscuous. She really slept around with everybody. And she was with this guy, Mike, at a time. And my stepfather knew it, and he loved my mom, and it was breaking his heart. So she had us two younger kids, my sister and I, and I think I was like 5 at the time, and I heard a big commotion. I didn't get to see it, but I saw the aftermath. My stepfather came over to the house. I believe he really didn't get a chance to tell me, but I believe he came over to kill my mother and Mike, her lover at the time. And when the door opened up, instead of a pull of his own vomit, I got to see him in a pull of his own blood with a .38 caliber across his chest. He'd shot himself. And we start growing up a little bit. You know, a year goes on or so. And my brother, very heavy drug addict, alcoholic. He's been in prison for 10 years and all this crazy stuff. But as kids, he started using heavily about 11 and 12 years old. And he was dealing drugs at his school. And he got hooked up into PCP. And he came home one night, and I remembered being afraid of him, you know, because I just see this look in his eyes. You know, he's sucked up and skinny, dark circles under his eyes, just this crazed look. And he walked through the door, and my mother said to him, you know, one of the times we had a house, I mean, we've been homeless. We lived on an abandoned school bus at one time, eating squirrel stew, you know. So it was just like, okay, we have some sort of normality, whatever that is. And we're living in this house, and he walks through the door, and she tells him, Jimmy, go into the bathroom and wash up for supper. What he heard was, Jim, go into the bathroom. The tub is full of bugs and shit. I want you to rub them all over yourself. And he went into the bathroom and opened the curtain, and that's what he saw. And he went to the fireplace and grabbed the fire poker and took it to my mother. He broke her leg. He didn't, you know, kill her, but he was trying to. And he ended up spending the next 4 years in a mental institution. And I got his transcripts when I was 18, and some of the things that he believed happened never did, you know, and that baffled me. My mother decided she didn't like men anymore and got into a lesbian relationship, and then moved us to Seattle, and again, back to poverty. And this woman was beating the crap out of my mom on a regular basis. I'm about 7 years old now. And I couldn't take it, and I said, let's get out of here. We left all of our stuff behind once again and ended up moving down to Sacramento. And that's when my drinking really took off. By the time I was 8 years old, I was getting drunk, and I mean blackout drunk on a regular basis. I think I developed a taste for bourbon in the womb. About 10, 11 years old, I'm smoking weed, drinking booze, smoking cigarettes. By the time I'm in junior high school, it's full blown. I'm dropping LSD. 14 and 15, I progressed on to putting needles in my arm. I was shooting cocaine and methamphetamine. I didn't mess with heroin because of what it did to my dad, so I was afraid of it. I used it once later, way later in my life, trying to commit suicide, actually. And luckily, it didn't work. All I've ever known is my mom to be this huge drug addict and huge alcoholic and just making these horrific consequential decisions that she absolutely refused to be accountable for. It's everybody else. There's nothing wrong with her. And she was a cocktail waitress on the north end of Sacramento, and she looked frickin' awful. She had like the Tammy Faye Baker makeup kit jumping off. She's swollen. And she's a cocktail waitress at this swing club. And this guy used to come in and sit in the corner and just watch my mom. And she'd come over to give him a drink. And it was coffee, water, soda, but never alcohol. And so one day she walked up and she was kind of tipped out. And she said, you know, why don't you ever drink? And he said, why don't you ever stop? You know, and she got this huge tear buildup in her eye. And he hands her his card and says, you know, when you're ready to quit, give me a call. And I remembered that right about that time. I heard her crying all the time, just that deep down soul pain crying. And I asked her, I said, you know, Mom, what's the matter? And she said, son, I want to stop drinking and I can't. And it was shortly thereafter she called this guy and he took her to her first AA meeting. And I'm going to tell you, with the first time I saw her at that time, I'd never seen her happy like that. And I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was something, and it gave me hope. I saw a light go on inside of her. If whatever that is can help her get through this, then maybe that can work for me. And it took 23 years for that seed to take root. And I carried a lot of shame and guilt for a lot of years over that stuff, but it's just my story. That's the experience that I had. I never got to meet my father. I didn't get to hear his voice, and I longed to hear him say, son, I'm proud of you. And I didn't ever get to hear that. I blamed him a lot of years and used a lot of drugs and drank a lot of booze. And I think I developed that in the womb. I was almost born in a movie theater because she was in a blackout drunk and thought she spilled her bourbon in her lap and found out that her water broke. So I was born with drugs and alcohol in my system. And I've struggled with that throughout my life. I've had to go in and out of different recovery programs and different 12-step programs. But it all kind of boiled down to that one common denominator, and that was, it's your fault that I'm like this. I was told at one time he was, you know, a good man on the inside. You know, he had a good heart and hard worker and all those things. But the minute he got tied up in drugs, he became a monster. It wasn't so much that I yearned for my father, it was that I yearned for my imagination of who I thought he should have been, and that's not who he was. And so it was probably a blessing that I never got to meet him, because I may not be here talking to you right now. There's been something that has had its hand on me since I was a child. I've heard it. If I don't have a game plan, if I don't have a recipe to follow, and I'm just flailing around, walking aimlessly, trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do, it's a crash is coming. and I know that. I see things that I can't explain, and I usually won't talk to people about it because it really comes across as, you know, God, are you in psychosis now? Is this a part of your bipolar? I feel and smell and taste what an evil spirit is. I have seen it in people, not very often, but I see it, you know, where people are consumed by that thing. It absolutely wants to crush me. Collectively and as a whole, it wants to crush everything that I'm all about, and it's been trying to do that since I was in the womb. It knew that I was coming. I don't think I'm all that. That's not what I mean. I'm not delusional and think I'm some sort of super psychic messiah type dude. I don't believe in that at all. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there is something so good and so pure inside of me. And all it takes is for somebody to take a moment to recognize that and receive it. So I go into the church, and I've been called a prophet because I can read people and see things, and I have an intuition and an insight that is very powerful, and they'll call that prophecy. I've been a clairvoyant at Berkeley Psychic Institute. I go to a psychiatrist and they'll say I'm bipolar. You know, there's all these different things. And it's just like, you know what? It's not about a label. You know, when you look somebody in the eye, you know somebody who's may not have experienced all those ugly things, but it's irrelevant. What they experience for the moment is that person right there, right then, right now. And do I accept you in? Most people are terrified of each other. They build up their walls and they say, you know, I've been hurt before. I don't want to be hurt again. Man, anytime a wall tries to even rear its ugly head around me, I'll knock it down. There's an old Indian artist. He passed away from cancer. His name's Santiago Tafoya. And he said something to me then that just, you know, he planted a seed because I was telling him all this stuff about all these problems I had on the inside. And he said, you know, this is an old Indian saying, but he said, Nick, in each and every one of us, there's a white wolf and a black wolf, the spirit of light and spirit of darkness that are constantly fighting each other. And the one that wins is the one that you feed the most.